right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Thank you for joining us here at RedEyes.tv. It's great to be back with you once again. I'm Henrik. In case you're new, check out our websites, RedEyes.tv and RedEyesMembers.com. Today, we have Matt Bracken back on the show today. In case you're new to his work, he's from Baltimore, Maryland. Originally, he graduated from the University of Virginia back in 1979 with a degree in Russian studies. Interesting, we might return to that in a little bit here. He was commissioned in the U.S. Navy through the NROTC program at the University of Virginia, and then graduated from Basic Underwater Demolition SEAL Training Class 105 in Coronado, I think it is, California. He served on the East Coast Underwater Demolition Team and SEAL teams as well, taking a Naval Special Warfare Detachment to Beirut in 1983. Mr. Bracken left active duty after Lebanon upon completing his obligated military service, but he remained in an active reserve status through the remainder of the 1980s. He's big into sailing. He's sailed a lot of the different oceans out there. He's even built his own boat, which is pretty cool, actually. My dad was big into sailing as well. And, of course, he has a number of books under his belt as well, a lot of novels. Matt, it's great to have you back. How are you, sir?
Very good. It's good to be on. I haven't been on this side of the camera in a while. I've been, I guess, sort of black-pilled or demoralized for, a couple of years.
That's no good.
It's not. Well, black-pilled or just like pulling your own horizon and figuring, you know, we're not going to save the – I really don't see like the 50-state United States – coming back together under the Constitution in another 10 years. So
no,
I just don't see that.
Yep. No, we have to think of new configurations, new ways, new this is history, right? That's how it's always been.
That's right.
It's painful, and I too get very nostalgic. I want it the way that it was. I want our countries restored. I want us to bring back, you know, that age of greatness and stuff. And that might happen in the future, but it's not going to look exactly the way it looked in the past. You know what I mean? And the same, I think, is with the U.S. I think most likely the U.S. will probably break up. It will be balkanized. It will be fractured in some kind of way, right?
Yeah, you could say if you just divide periods of history into two sections, you have periods of relative stability, whether it's under serfdom or whether it's under Soviet communism, or, you know, give yourself any time and place. But where the rules are established and people go generation to generation, the status quo, you know your place in the system. And if you work hard, you know, you can have a family and make your way through the world. And then there's periods of turmoil. You know, this is the fourth turning way of looking at it. And if you're a human and a man, then you have to be also ready for navigating through these, you know, canyons and minefields and the shifting sands where everybody's pulling a rug out from under your feet.
Yeah.
So this is part of life too, and we just happen to be in a generation where the status quo is ending.
Yeah.
So it's more painful.
Yeah, opportunity in that too, though, we should say, because, man, have things been derailed, and in a way, no one knows exactly how this will go down and what the best way out of the situation is. But at some point, when I look at the world today, when I look at what happens in America and Europe, it just feels like we just have to kind of, it's not that we have to engage, we have to work, we try to have to wake up our fellow man, all these things, right? But at the same time, part of me feels all we can do at this point is just back up a little bit and let our enemies make the mistakes. Let's not interrupt them when they do it, because they certainly are burying themselves. That's how I kind of see it.
They are burying themselves. And if we can carve out a little bit of safe ground for our own families and even raise a family, which to me is like for a person who's, you know, awake with eyes wide open, is an act of courage today.
Yeah.
To say, I'm not only going to fight this battle, but I'm going to do it by carving out my own, you know, my own little fiefdom where I can be safe, be strong, and also raise children. That's like, so I greatly respect you for that right there. But I've been, I guess you could say black-pilled, because I at this point, I think that anybody who believes we're going to vote our way out of this, I think is kind of kidding themselves. I'm reminded of the famous cartoon where the cattle are in like a pen, and one of the cows is holding up like a sign and pointing to the slaughterhouse that's like, you know, over the hill, and the other cows are saying, you know, what's with all the conspiracy theories? Because we're now being led toward a future which is going to be, you know, central bank digital currency, facial recognition. I mean, Nigel Farage, whatever you think of the man, he led the Brexit movement. He's being debanked in England.
I saw his mug, I guess, on your Twitter. I was like, oh, something with Neil Farage.
So Nigel Farage was told by his banks, sorry, Nigel, we have a little problem, dude. And he went to like six other English banks, and they're like, sorry, we can't take your money. So
welcome to the club, Nigel Farage.
It's not just Canada. It's not just Canada. It's not just, you know, it's the West.
Yes.
And we're being led into this future where of total unfreedom. They used COVID as like a big beta test. How far can we push the sheep? You know, if we tell all the sheep, you have to be stained with purple dye for our own safety, what percentage will say, F you, or nobody's putting purple dye on me? There's no good reason for that. But if 95% of the sheep will say, give me the purple dye, if it means I can go through to the next field to graze, give me the purple dye.
Yeah.
That's what that was all about. I would say we pretty much failed that test, because most of the sheep took the jab. I mean, I didn't.
Yep.
My own immediate family didn't, but I know people very close to me, and they've suffered greatly.
Yeah, same.
And
here.
Some of them are so brainwashed that even to this point, they can't admit that there's any connection between, like, you know, the clots in their legs, that they can't walk anymore. It's like, but you had like two shots and two quote unquote boosters.
Yeah.
And they're still so brainwashed they can't accept it. So as far as I'm concerned, the whole COVID experience, it's not over, because that was just a test.
Yeah.
The next test is going to be, I just saw Martin Armstrong on with Greg Hunter, very good video today. And yeah, I would agree. They're going to push for this war. The neocons want a out and out war with Russia.
Yeah.
They don't care if half the population is killed. I think that's
upside as far as they're concerned.
Yeah. As long as they're not there, as long as they're in Patagonia at their, you know, fourth or fifth estate when it happens, it's all upside. But the other thing that'll happen is it'll wipe out all the bad paper. All the bad books will be erased. Nobody's going to say, wait a minute, where did all that money go from the housing crisis? And where did all those billions that went to Ukraine? Nobody will count.
Right.
So,
yep.
If out of a 100 billion ballpark figure going to Ukraine, at least probably 20 billion went straight into bank accounts.
Oh, for sure. Oh, yeah.
You know,
at least.
And that's big money. That's like buy a castle, buy a jet money.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's a war, all of that's erased. It'll be before and after this war. And the people that have the assets, gold, the castles, the land, they'll just come back. They'll just pop back up again. And say, well, you know, now it just shows we need a global digital currency.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's coming.
They have to do some kind of financial reset, unless the whole system as it exists will basically implode in and of itself. But most likely they will not let it go to that. They will use the chaos and the crisis that it will present for as long as possible to offer up this new system, right? Well, we're gonna reset all the debt, but there's just a little caveat here. You have to agree to this new centralized global banking system, essentially.
Yeah, but I have a saying that a plan to ride a tiger is not the same as actually riding the tiger.
No, so the map is not the territory.
Yeah, the Victorian Newlands, the Newland Kagan gang that are really running our country, Biden is just obviously just a puppet at this point that can barely read the teleprompter.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They actually believe, and these are mostly Polish and Ukrainian people of a certain bent who really, at this point in their evolution, they consider Russia to be like the arch demon of the world, because they're not down for the whole LGBTQ trans transformation. So they actually think that they can use Ukraine as like a battering ram against their enemy. They don't care about the hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians, diaspora, maimed, killed. They don't care.
Yeah, no.
So they're not going to care also about potential, going right up to the brink of nuclear war. And in their thinking, they might believe we can bluff to the edge of a nuclear war and not suffer the consequences. That's the plan, to ride the tiger.
Mm-hmm.
But riding the tiger, sometimes the tiger gets a vote and turns around and bites that guy. So we could end up, when you have basically psychopathic people, and I agree with what I heard on that Martin Armstrong, the Armstrong video today with Greg Hunter. They are psychopaths. If they were individually saying, I'm going to put something into the water at the kindergarten that'll like maybe kill half the kids, but I have a good reason for it, you'd say, yeah, you should be locked up.
Yeah.
You're a madman. We have leaders behind that we don't even elect, that we don't even know who they are behind the
That's
president.
That's right. Yep.
That are that psychopathic, that are dealing at the level of vaccines for population control. Absolutely no doubt about it.
Yeah.
When this, if you look at Bill Gates, James Corbett, Corbett Report is like already 2 or 3 years old, but the biographical data is amazing. Who is the real Bill Gates? I highly mm-hmm. recommend.
Yeah, I think I saw it. Yeah.
He's a third generation eugenicist.
Mm-hmm.
And like the Democrats, racists from that period to this period, they'll put a different coat of paint on it. Now it's we're the equity racists, with the affirmative action, that it was the cotton plantation. Now it's the vote harvesting plantation. But they'll go through these transformations, but they're basically, they have a Superman eugenicist ethos inside. Margaret Sanger wanted to get rid of the mud people. Mm-hmm. She's like a saint of the left now, but her whole rationale for eugenicism was get rid of the mud people. That was like in the 20s and 30s. And it has swung all the way through now to like, let's get rid of the white people. But this is the same mentality of the cure is let's get rid of a group of people. And now we're the ones they're going to get rid of.
Yeah, exactly. No, you're right.
And we've seen how well it's going down. When you don't want to have the 50-year-old white man, building your submarine,
that's
the
right.
submarine isn't going to work that great.
No, go woke, die, right? That's the not go broke. You're going to die if you fall through on this. They want to get rid of us because we're standing in the way. We are able to do things which is occasionally could be unpredictable, put up too much of a fight. Maybe we'll find solutions around some of these things, right? I mean, you talk about them being eugenicists, and it's true in the sense that I think that they will are trying to supercharge themselves, so to speak, with technology, all kinds of genetic engineering and all that kind of stuff. But that's only for them. That's not for anybody. Not that I need it or want it anyway, but I'm saying, I think that they truly see themselves as putting themselves in a position where they're the new gods, essentially.
Oh, sure.
They plan
to download themselves into chips and buy a new clone or just to buy some young 20-year-old and download their brain and be immortals.
Yeah.
I think, and maybe he's finally given up, but I've thought for a long time, somebody like George Soros, why is he hanging on so long? He's got Alexander's ready to pick up the reins and mm-hmm. continue the dynasty, like with the Kim Jong Il, third generation North Korea. I think that they really want to hang on because they think they're going to get some kind of an injection, and then that they'll be downloaded to a new body. I do see themselves as transforming themselves into supermen that are immortal, and we're just bugs at the picnic. And the only difference now between other times is, instead of using this way of wiping people out, we have the technological means to get the people to want them their own selves to be wiped out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we'll put people into Europe and America that come in saying we're going to replace you and wipe you out, and they say, well, thank God, because I'm feeling such guilt for my colonial heritage. And I'm still looking in Africa for the Swedish and the Irish colonies.
Right. Yeah.
Where were the Swedes whipping those Kenyans? I mean, I don't see it.
It was one island we borrowed from France for 10 years. That's not even a joke. That's a true story. Saint Bartholomew. You can find Swedish road signs there still. The Swedish television went down there and did this, like, you know, sob story piece about how, oh, you're part of this. I'm serious. This is what they did in order to guilt Swedes into basically accepting their inevitable replacements, you know?
Yeah, I've been through the Panama Canal a few times. I was down there in January with Michael Yon and some of his people. I read on the way when I was sailing from San Diego to Panama to Florida, I read David McCulloch's first book that he won a Pulitzer Prize for, called The Path Between the Seas, which was in the early part of the 20th century. The Americans took over from the French and then actually built the canal. Well, the white people down there were paid in gold. So the engineer class, leadership class of building the canal were paid in gold coin. They had their own mess halls. It was a segregation era, right? Mm-hmm. They had their own housing, mess halls, things like that. The blacks were paid in silver coin. They had their own housing, et cetera. So when David McCulloch was writing the book, and there were still people alive, so the book's like, you know, 40, 50 years old now, I guess. So he was going back to Jamaica and Barbados, and he was looking for these oppressed black people that were going to say how terrible it was mm-hmm. building the Panama Canal for silver. And everybody that he found that was still alive was like, that was the best 10 years of my life or the best 5 years of my life. I came back to Jamaica with, you know, all of this silver, and I bought a farm, or I, you know, bought a restaurant because I had actual silver coin.
Yeah.
And so the whole oppression thing had fallen apart because, you know, they were still paid in real money, and they didn't have like a complex out of it mm-hmm. at all. Now, I don't know if you've seen, well, there's a video from a few days ago where a man's mugged and his wife is almost stabbed, and he's like crying to the police about, don't arrest the black guy.
We play that, and that's incredible, amazing. Like, but it's also that video is a perfect exemplary kind of the liberal, you know, I guess, you know, in a way that he doesn't want to have that guilt onto himself associated with this event, right? So he's saying, I don't want you to arrest him, you know.
The brainwashing works.
But don't just take him away from me, though. Make sure that he doesn't bother me and my family anymore. But, of course, the inevitable thing is that guy will just go on, if he wasn't arrested and put in jail or whatever, he'd just go on and terrorize the next guy, the next family.
And we see that over and over. These guys, these subway people that throw people in train tracks, They're known to the police. They've been arrested 100 times.
You know, yeah.
There's I was really amazed when I heard about this. I wrote a short story called The Alien Orc Way, but there's a group of islands that are hundreds of miles east of New Zealand called the Chatham Islands, like Chatham. And the people there, these islanders from like, you know, 1,000 years ago, they became pacifists because their little island civil war, when they finally sorted it out, they agreed that they would always settle things peacefully.
Mm-hmm.
So when there's a conflict on the islands, they would say, you know, tribe A, get your strongest young swimmer, your young man. Tribe B, you're going to swim out the bird rock, grab something and come back. And whoever wins, that's who wins our big argument. So it's sort of like the, what do they call it, medieval times? A test by champions or...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So this worked for them because they had developed a society that everybody would agree to these rules. Well, the Maoris...
Sorry to interrupt. Just put a bookmark in there. Was it a major conflict, you said, that led them to deciding that this is the way to move forward? Was that what happened?
Yeah, they had... Because it's a couple of islands, and they had a period of conflict. And when they worked it out, the treaty that they created, like say the American Constitution, for example,
mm-hmm.
it was so strong that everybody agreed that we will abide by this treaty of peace and we'll never settle problems violently ever again.
So it was their World War II, right? In a way.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's a small group of islands, but
sure.
But they agreed that if we have an argument, like, you know, should we cut down these trees or should mm-hmm. we divert this river? We're not going to settle it violently. You know, you get your champion, we'll get our champion. They swim to Bird Rock. Whoever wins, that's who gets the argument.
Mm.
And that worked for centuries, but it led them to be handicapped into this mindset of pacifism that would only work there among their own people. You know, like the Japanese today, for example, you know, they have their own culture. They don't want other cultures coming in. So the Maoris that invaded and took over New Zealand, people think, you know, the Maoris, maybe the Haka with the scary faces, they were not native to to New Zealand. They
took over New Zealand.
They savagely conquered New Zealand.
Yeah.
Well, when the English whalers discovered both New Zealand and the Chatham Islands, some of the crew on these whalers, the Maori crew, because there was like a shortage of workers, of sailors, so some of the whalers would hire on Maori as crew. They're brave, they're strong. You got English crew that either they get sick or they go native, like Mutiny on the Bounty. They want to hang out with the girls. So you get some Maori sailors. Well, the Maoris figured out, wow, there's this group of islands called the Chatham Islands. And if we ever went back there, we'll just take that place over because they won't fight.
Yeah.
So the first shipload of Maoris that got to the Chatham Islands, it took them much longer to get there. So they didn't do a good job of planning, like the food and the water. By the time they actually reached the Chatham Islands, the Maoris were so sick and starving and dehydrated that they needed to be nursed back to health by the Chatham Islanders. So at that point, the Chatham Islanders could have said, we don't want you Maoris. You know, you make scary faces. You got all these weapons. The Chatham Islanders nursed them back to health. As soon as the Maoris were healthy, like one quarter of the population of the island in size was the Maoris, but they were like immediately going into like spears, you know, war, decapitation, rape, murder, enslavement, and took over the Chatham Islands. And the Chatham Islanders, because of this thing called Nunuku's Law, that law of peace, the younger islanders, some of them said, we need to fight back. We can't just be annihilated because of this centuries-old treaty of peace among our own people.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a new invasion force. They don't respect our law. They don't respect our treaties. So we have to learn to fight. And the older Chatham Islanders said, it's just sound familiar. It's better to die according to our beliefs, to be wiped out, extinct, let our women be raped, turned into slaves, put in pens for like cannibal pens to be eaten, than to fight back, because our whole ethos is we're pacifists. And you can understand how the Chatham Islanders with Nunuku's Law, that rose organically among their own people, so you can respect that. They didn't have Maoris attacking them all the time. So you can understand it. But what's happened in the 20th century and the 21st century is this psychological disposition has been weaponized.
Yeah.
They have figured out how to turn us into Chatham Island Nunuku's Law people.
That's right.
All you've got to do is say, the worst thing in the world is racism.
Yep, that's exactly.
Racism is worse than your daughter being raped.
Yep.
Racism is worse than being wiped out and turned into a slave in your own land. I mean, you see what's going on in France right now.
With the riots there and stuff. Yep.
Yeah, they fire the fireworks horizontally. And the enough people, and this is in every country, you see the boat there, in every country, and it's not only the left, but generally the left parties, and the names are different in every country, they'll say, if we let these illegals in, soon there'll be a voting bloc, and we'll promise them more free stuff.
That's right.
And once you get 5 or 10% of a people in your country, they can become a turning point, pivotal voting block, where you can't stop it anymore because you can't win the election unless that 5 or 10% votes for you.
Yeah.
And what is their main, what do they want more than anything else? Family reunification.
Right.
So in a generation, it's not 5 or 10%, it's 20 or 30%. Now you are the Nunuku's Law Chatham Islanders. You're wiped out. You're wiped out where you lived. And that's why, you know, as black-pilled as I've been, I have to I have to just come to the point, if we don't fight, we're extinct.
That's right.
Those are our choices. You fight or you go extinct.
Yep, it's true. Yeah, here's some of the footage of some of the latest riots here over Neil. What was his name again? Nolly, Neely, or something like that. The 17-year-old black kid that was shot by...
French George Floyd.
Exactly, yeah. French George Floyd. There you go. And, of course, it's interesting, too, because here you have an example of... essentially all the different quote-unquote minority groups in France coming out supporting this just over the issue that they feel they're the same race, they share the same, you know, kind of anti-French sentiments here, essentially, right? And they're uniting over that issue. Well, France is the enemy. That's how they see it.
This is existential. You know, this is existential. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of the French are on the side of the invaders because they're nihilistic. They hate their own selves. And, you know, they're brainwashed satanic leftists. You know, even if you're not a believer, I think that it's possible to believe in evil, pure evil. And there are people that just want to see it all burn down. And they're not all the invaders. There are a lot of Westerners that would like to see their own countries burn down.
Oh, definitely.
You see these men riding with their... when you see the men riding bicycles naked in front of children, they would burn the whole place down.
They do it partially because they know it ticks off the other side. It's an attack on traditional Western, you know, civilization and all the chaos, degeneracy that comes with that. They want that because the conservatives, they don't like that. So they're, you know, they have to be pro those things.
That's right.
That's how it is sometimes. That's how simple it is.
One of the things that I really am grateful to Red Ice, you and Lana, and I think that when you two are on, it's like, it's awesome.
Well,
anyway, in fact, I was watching the show about the summer solstice, and in 1980, I was in Denmark with Danish frogmen, the Frømand Korpset, like Frogman Corps.
Mm. Oh yeah, gotcha. Yep.
And on the actual summer solstice, we're in Jutland, facing the Atlantic, but it was like miles and miles of like little tiny islands, and to the east was just low grassland, like a very low like wetland.
Yep.
And we just saw the sun touch the horizon, but you just saw like the like a twilight going across, and then the sun's back up. So
beautiful.
That was a great show for me because I was making all of those memories. We're going to go extinct if we don't start fighting. And one of the things that, and one of the reasons that I write the books, my novels are like kind of like they're fiction, but they're history. You know, everything in them I try to make as real as possible. And Red Ice has really helped open my eyes about, for example, the whole Weimar period, which is just erased from our history, like so many things.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's not like we haven't been here before.
That's right. That's
we have
right.
been
yep.
here before.
Yeah.
These actors, they come around and around and around.
Yeah.
And you know, what comes after Weimar? What comes after Weimarica or you know, Weimar Europe? This is a Weimar type of an attack.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
And we have to come to grips with that. I don't know what comes after Weimar, but I don't think it's going to be we vote ourselves back to, 1950s America or Europe.
No, it has to be a counter attack. It's hopefully at least that's the other thing here, right? That was different times. It doesn't, as they say, history doesn't always repeat, but it rhymes, right? Isn't that one of them?
You know, taking a long view, you see some of the same characters.
No, of course, 100%.
But the faces don't change.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about the counter reaction to the Weimar period.
It won't always be the same. That's right. It can be different in different countries.
Oh, that too. Yeah. I just hope we have it in us to mount that fight against than those who are doing this to us. You know what I mean? Sometimes you look around, there's a lot of apathy, a lot of lazy people in the 30s and, you know, 20s. It was a different character of man around. You know what I mean?
And they didn't, well, you know, they had the, what, I forget what the Hemingway, that generation, the lost generation, the proto-hippies that were like the expats that hung around Europe.
Mm-hmm.
they didn't want to go back to America. They, you know, Europe was a cheap place to live, and you could do anything, especially in Germany.
Mm.
So it was a wide open kind of a playing field. But they at least didn't have an internet to search what had happened in like the Paris Commune, say in the 1870s.
Good point.
There was no internet.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe a few intellectuals could have said, "This reminds me of the French Revolution with the, you know, Illuminists that came from Bavaria with a plan, and you know some of them were named like Rothschild, and you know." Generation after generation, century after century, these strands keep emerging.
Yep.
So in the 20s and 30s, I think that they believed that the Soviet Revolution, the street fighting in Germany, it was something new that was shocking. Nobody understood it. Nobody had a way to measure it.
Right.
Or get ahead of the narrative to figure out where is it going. Maybe a few did.
Yeah.
But they had no vehicle for getting a wide audience. You know, I was in a political family growing up, say in the 1970s, my mom got National Review when it was a conservative Bill Buckley magazine.
Mm-hmm.
So every 2 weeks, National Review came out. Otherwise, all the TV channels were left wing. Walter Cronkite, who said, you know, we've lost in Vietnam, he turned out to be a World Federalist, like a secret member of the World Federalist Society, sort of like a prototype WEF.
Mm-hmm.
But he was called, when I grew up, the most trusted man in America, Walter Cronkite.
I remember that slogan. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. He had covered the world war in Europe. You know, he was Uncle Walter. So if he said, you know, we're losing in the Tet Offensive in Vietnam, that meant it's over. He didn't say until he had retired from television that he was a secret president of the World Federalist Society, like that era's WEF.
Mm-hmm.
So my mom gets National Review, and it's talking about all of these plots, you know, the John Birch type of stuff. What's that? 0.5% or a nobody read National Review. So you might know what's going on, but you couldn't move the needle.
Right.
Now we have these weapons in the internet.
Yep.
So we can actually kind of move the needle. And maybe you can't shift the needle so much that we win and get our country back. But even if you get enough people to move to Florida or Idaho, and the South Africans have a term, lager up, L-A-A-G-E-R. It's like a wagon train in the circle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we might have to be in a period where we lager up.
Exactly. I know. Yeah, that's
because
just it.
We have to get through the coming period of mayhem.
I mean, you look
and
at some
come out the other side with our children.
We have to. That's what I feel. Sometimes we just have to survive. We have to. We might not win all these battles, but we have to survive it. And those who are surviving and still alive on the other side of this period that we're now going through is going to be in a. Maybe they'll be in a good position. Maybe it will be horrific conditions, but they will be alive at least. I mean, I'm looking around. You mentioned the bikers here, right? This travesty of footage from Seattle and New York here over the last few days.
Nobody's arrested.
It's completely
insane. You get arrested.
Absolutely,
right.
Yeah. Lana made a point in one of our recent shows, like, if this was, like, right-wingers that would be out and doing this, as you said, then they would have been arrested, as they should have, right? For, like, indecent exposure or something like that. But now it's
if they had been right-wingers wearing suits saying the election was stolen.
There, exactly. Yeah, we don't have. It's true. We don't even have to go that far. We can just say they talk about what's going on in the world, and that now they're a terrorist stamp. You know,
that's
stamped.
Right. The biggest threat, the white extremist.
Oh my God.
But yeah. I went from very black-pilled to I didn't write it. I haven't written in a while because I just didn't feel like the, you know, where's the point in it?
Right. Yeah.
The books that I wrote in, you know, 10, 15 years ago. I was trying to like write them kind of as warnings in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're here now.
In that period.
Yeah,
now,
we're in that period.
Yeah.
But also as a marker that people did see what was coming. You know, people could see what was coming. In my Reconquista book, I have illegal aliens that are drafted into the U.S. military, instant citizenship. It's all happening now.
Yeah.
Right? It's better if you don't speak English, right? It's better.
Oh, exactly. I mean, yeah, but was it Biden recently said it was the whole thing? You know, we might get into detail about that, but the Supreme Court, right, it rejects affirmative action, ending use of race as a factor in college admissions. And Biden came out right away talking about how the Supreme Court is not a, what was it, not a real court. It's a rogue court, you know, things like that. And it went on a whole spiel about how great diversity was. And one of the things he did say, and I even want to ask you as a, obviously as a military, Navy SEAL, you know, about this. That he talks about how much better the military is, how the readiness of America is that much gooder because of all the differences.
The military is being primed to do drone warfare against you and me.
Right.
From boot camp on, they're being taught the new creed, which is white racism is the biggest evil. They don't care about China or Russia. They're getting ready to be mentally primed to put a rocket through our roof. Because we are, you know, the white threat.
Right.
And unfortunately, that's just where it is. And, you know, you're familiar, obviously, most people watching this are with the term accelerationism.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And there's another term that I am partial to now, collapsitarianism. Okay.
Right.
Because if we just stay on the track that we're on, we're going to be put through more fake elections where if you are too loud about it being a fake election, you could be arrested.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're like Nigel Farage. You suddenly have no bank account.
Yeah.
And you can't get a bank account. And we're going to be right on the path with a merger with like the Chinese style facial recognition, credit score, you know, social credit score. We're merging that way. You know, I saw one when you sent me like the talking points. You're talking about the what they call the WEF Summer Davos in China.
Yes,
they've had that for years now, and maybe it was interrupted by COVID or something. But there's a merger. And
is that what it's actually called? Summer Davos? Is that what they call
that's
it?
That's the nickname. Or,
that's the nickname, that's the right? Nickname. Yeah, exactly. Okay,
but it's the Summer Davos.
Yep.
And Michael Yan and I completely agree on this. We're very close to Michael. The CCP and the WEF are like this, okay? Both of them agree that we need to wipe out national identity.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We have to just get rid of that. So they're building this tri-state super city in Holland, Germany, and Belgium. It's going to be like five times bigger than London. That's why they're getting rid of the farmers. They've already drawn it. It's already covers all of Holland, part of Germany, part of Belgium.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's the other end from Shanghai of a super rail line. So the ships, the trains, you know, the global Eurasia super mass, they're going to first get rid of us. The cranky whites that like can see this and put up a fight.
Yep.
That's why we're the enemy, because we can see it and put up a fight.
Yep.
As smart as Asians are, most Asians, and you know, and I'm just, you know, sometimes I've watched Gutfeld, he'll put a thing that says, what a racist would say, you know, like as a disclaimer. So Indians, Chinese, they're pretty much, in my opinion, I don't care if it's a totalitarian government, as long as I can make money and get rich.
Yeah, they're compliant, right? You know. Yeah.
Yeah, the freedom thing, who gives a shit?
Yeah, right.
If I'm a millionaire, I don't care if they're free.
Yep.
So from Shanghai to the WEF's planned super city, the tri-state super city, the other end of the rail line, eventually they both think Klaus Schwab and Hariri and his people,
mm-hmm.
they think at the end we'll be superior to the Chinese Communist Party. And the Chinese Communists think at the end we'll be superior. But that fight is like for 10, 20 years from now. In the meantime, they both agree we got to crush the Dutch, crush the Swedes,
yep.
crush the Americans.
Yep.
And the way that you crush them most effectively is – bring in millions of low IQ people that don't give a shit about your constitution, your history, your morals, your society. Just don't care.
Yep.
And there are no low IQ, high functioning, high tech free societies. Just doesn't exist. Where there have been for example, say some countries in South America or Republic of South Africa, you had to have a high IQ managerial elite to build those mines and those big farms. Once you get rid of that managerial elite, you can see Republic of South Africa, no more electricity, no more running water.
That's right.
Right? So that's planned for us because the people running it, they don't care if we all look like South Africa in terms of our we'll be so busy trying to like get food and electricity and water, we won't have time for politics.
That's right. There's no unification of the lower strata to get together to look at the top of the pyramid, who's in charge, who's doing this to us. It will be a chaos and just bare bone necessity that you have to worry about.
The Somali immigrants will fight the Guatemalan immigrants, you know, who will fight the Nigerian immigrants. And that's just easy pickings for the emerging managerial class.
Yep.
And in behind all of it will be, you know, AI and, you know, credit
social score.
Credit.
Yep.
So that's why I'm a collapsitarian in the sense that I think that it's hopeless to think we're going to put Humpty Dumpty back together up on the wall.
Yeah. Yep.
We have to find a place in the Northwest, the Bastion, or in Florida, or somewhere, or me with a boat. But we have to find a way to protect our own, you know, small tribe.
Yeah.
And merge it together with, you know, our own similar tribes. But
yeah,
what's being planned for us is annihilation.
100%. Yep.
And we're on that road.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. No, exactly. That's what you opened with. And I agree that that's why they want to take us, you know. And it's a time of great danger, you know, great. There's also the system, the establishment, whatever you want to call it, is also desperate at finding those and circling those that are managed to expose all of this, right, during this time.
I forget. You know? I went back through like the last month and wasn't the golden one. You had a guest on. It might have been the ferryman, but Alex, the ferryman.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. In Canada.
But some of the guests you've had on have been just so spectacular. And I noted a comment from that. We don't need to build a parallel society. We need to build a perpendicular society.
Yeah, it was actually a super chatter that brought that to my attention.
We don't need to be like this. We
exactly.
need to go there.
That's right. Yep, I agree.
Because all parallel societies are all rotting.
Yes, exactly.
We've got to go there.
Yep, totally right.
And that's where my thinking is now. You know, we have to be strong locally, and I absolutely agree, like lagering up in Montana, Wyoming, Idaho.
Yeah.
100%.
Yep, no, exactly.
100%.
Yeah, because otherwise, I mean, there's no, as you said, there's no gluing this back together, and it's getting, because as this happens, I think the elites on some level, right, that we'll have AI take care of that, we'll have automation, we'll have all these robots, or whatever the pipe dream is that they think is going to hold all of this together somehow. Clearly, that might work in this little area over here for a while, but the bigger picture, What they're doing intentionally to us is collapsing the system at the same time, right? So, I mean, it's not going to work because on some level, I don't think it's meant to work. I think the chaos is by design.
I generally go back to like kind of a you know, pyramid, you know, diagram in my head. You have at the bottom, you say people that would vote for Democrats today. At the bottom, they're just morons. They're just voting for free shit, period. Or they don't even know why they're voting. They just, somebody came to the door and said, here's your ballot. I'll give you $10 if you sign it and hand it back to me. Right.
Yeah.
That's in the middle. There might actually be people that are still thinking, you know, Marxist, leftist, LGBT stuff. And then higher up the pyramid, you have people that are thinking, I'm going to come through the other end and I'm going to be like a George Soros lieutenant or a Bill Gates, you know, executive officer. And I might not be a billionaire, but I'll be a multimillionaire. But at the very, very top, I think you've got just very evil people that want to see it all burn down.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you know, at any point when you pull people out of that pyramid, you can ask them, what are your motives and so forth. But the people that are driving it, the people at the very top, are extremely evil. You know, not to mention any names that I might have mentioned a few minutes ago, Bill Gates, but some of them have been to Lolita Island like 20 times.
Oh, at least. Absolutely. They're all compromised. They're all part of the same club.
Including Hillary.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, Hillary. All of them. I mean, look, all the banking executives are now, that's being unraveled, which is kind of interesting, right? Who was it again? There was the, who was it that was being questioned most recently? One of the J.P. Morgan, right, guys? Was it even Jamie Dimon, I think, was part of this, right? Weaved into the Epstein saga and stuff like that. So many others, too.
Yeah, the Epstein saga is very deep because... Even if you don't do anything personally, like let's just use a Harvard lawyer, Alan
Dershowitz.
He says, I was always on, I like agreed to represent him. I flew to California with him two or three times as his attorney with my wife. Take him at his word there. I mean, I don't think he's had an erection probably in 40 years. Okay? Take him at his word. Part of the Epstein, CIA, Mossad, dark forces power play there is if you get on the airplane, you're going to be slimed for life. So even if you didn't do anything, you're going to be slimed by association and put under some level of control just for that.
Yeah.
You know, actors, actresses that ever went to Lolita Island thinking, oh, I'm just doing some modeling or I'm, you know, meeting a film director. They didn't do anything, but they were there. So this is a very deep level of a control operation. You know, the FBI had when they went to Epstein's brownstone mansion, you know, where he had the massage tables and the underage models that were being lured in by Giselle. He was arrested for, I think, initially like financial type crimes.
Mm-hmm.
There were just boxes of you know, thumb drives and DVDs and videotapes, et cetera.
Yeah, that's right.
That were just left there like, oh, we didn't, the FBI said, well, we didn't have a warrant for them. So we just left them in the apartment for like a month. And gee whiz, a month later,
gone.
They were gone.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
So all of that is still in operation.
Incredible.
All of that is still in operation.
Yeah.
So I would say that if I was just guessing, somewhere above 10% of all U.S. senators are on some kind of a blackmail leash.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So anytime there's a close vote where it's going to be just one or two senators makes the difference, they can get them.
Mm-hmm.
Because all they, you know, that senator could be considered like a stalwart Republican conservative most of the time, but when it comes to this one vote, they can say, we got that videotape.
And we've seen stuff like that, though. Where they talk a big game. They've done stuff that looks very they talked about things that looks promising. We're going to do this. We're going to go do that. And sometimes it's a Josh Hawley, or sometimes it's a
yes.
You know, there's names you can throw out there, right?
But well, the Supreme Court Chief Justice, he was everything he wrote about Obamacare was I'm going to shoot it down.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that he had been saying for weeks indicated. He is a 90% sure vote against Obamacare. He flipped his vote at like, you know, the night of.
Mm-hmm.
And a week later, he's filmed coming out of like the Bank of Malta with a big leather briefcase where he went with another man. Like, it's like the kind of a bank where Hunter was planting his money.
Mm-hmm.
There's famous pictures of him where some reporter. Oh, and the reporter that took the picture and wrote about it. She died like in a fiery car crash like 2 years later. It's like amazing stuff like that.
Oh, jeez.
You know, and the people that pull at these threads, you know, they're just like, ah, oh, that couldn't possibly be. But when you see it over and over again, you have to think something's happening
here. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. 100%. So I want to take a quick little break here. We're going to continue. We're just kind of, it feels like we're just warming up here. There are a lot of things I do want to ask you about. I do want to get into a little bit more detail about Russia and what you think about that in terms of the coup and, you know, those kinds of things there. It's very suspicious, but I think the West is being played at the same time in all of this, right? But all your books, is it easiest to get them at your main website, enemiesforeignanddomestic.com? Where would you send people to pick up copies of your books?
They're on Amazon. But if you go to the website, I have a P.O. box so people can get like signed books from me and then I get a bigger cut than Jeff Bezos.
Good. That's what we
and,
need.
And you can do that with PayPal also. PayPal, they're on Audible. They're on Kindle. But I, as much as I like Audible and Kindle, you know, it's cash flow. The printed books really mean a lot more to me because they can't be mass deleted. Everything digital at some point is just going to go whoosh, gone.
Yes. Or what I'm thinking about now, which plays into everything you mentioned already about the AI systems and like, they will start auto, you know, correcting things on in real time as it's happening. Like depending on whatever weird new moral framework is going to happen, you can change just this one line in somebody whoever's book. Right? I mean, you can do it on a web browser, right? You can actually there's plugins now. You can say
and do it seamlessly. And AI,
you won't even notice that it's happening. There won't be an announcement that if something was changed. You know what I mean? But it changes across everything.
And anybody who is against it is going to be considered an extremist and a retrograde. What's the term? Reactionary
terrorist.
why are you trying to support the old racist Huckleberry Finn version?
Right. Yep. And we've seen it. Right. We've seen it in Dr. Seuss books. We've seen it in Roald Dahl's books. There's like. It's never ending. That's why it's important to actually have paper copies of things. You know what I mean, that's what's going to last, and they can't change that unless you have a brain chip and they change the words in front of your page.
Why, also there could be whether it's legit or contrived. I mean, the sun could throw out a solar flare tomorrow,
right.
And everything digital is erased.
That's
so
true.
What's actually printed on the shelf might be the only stuff you've got.
That's right. That's right.
You know, that.
All right, enemies, foreignanddomestic.com. That's the website. Make sure you follow Matt Bracken as well on Twitter and on Gab. We'll have those linked up below. Is there any platforms that you like that you post on regularly otherwise?
No, I was permabanned from Twitter, and this is like part of the humor of trying to get this computer working again because I haven't been in this room for a while. But I was permabanned from Twitter. So there are devices where if I just try to log into Twitter, it immediately throws me into like, thought criminal, you've been banned. You know, you can't use this device. And I'm like, no, I've got a new handle now. And it's like, no, you've got to use a VPN or you've got to get another computer. So we're still playing those games. But for the time being, Twitter and Gab are probably my two. But I'm also on Getter, but only like as a backup.
Right. Yeah.
In case they... I'm banned from Twitter again, or Gab gets taken down.
All right,
but
Matt.
I do respect. I have great respect for Torba and Gab because
they
have stuck through. And I've been, going back 4 or 5 years. I know there are people. I have been made stupid mistakes, and I have been suckered and fooled at time and again. But Gab has stood through all of it. So
it's true.
I'm never going to abandon Gab. No.
Gab is a great option, and I really appreciate them being there and staying steadfast against all the attacks that they've suffered too.
That's right.
So definitely, we'll have Matt Bracken's Gab down below in the description, together with the latest Twitter. Did you try get your old account back? Nothing of that worked for you?
I could never get my old account back, but after Musk, about a month after Musk, I just came in with a new Matt Bracken 48 handle, and it didn't reject it.
Okay, good.
Which it had been for like 3 years, rejected. No matter what I tried to do, it would just say, oh, you're the same old thought criminal. So finally I came in, but I came in with like zero followers. So, whatever.
Got to rebuild again. All right. Well, make sure you follow Matt over there. We're going to take a quick break, guys. We'll be back in part two with Matt Bracken. Stay tuned. See you on the other side. Thank you so much for watching part one together with Matt Bracken. We're going to continue our conversation in part two over at redicemembers.com. You can also join us over at Odyssey or through Subscribestar, whatever you prefer. We're going to continue our conversation, talk more about Russia, Ukraine, the war, the elite, the establishment, and the kind of time that we're facing both in Europe and America. I guess, generally speaking, the Western world, that's where we're seeing shit like this going down right now. What kind of conditions can we expect? What's going to happen as more and more things start to fail? Basically, we talk about what we have to do to survive and the long-term goal that we have to set for ourselves as well, our children, our grandchildren, and so forth. Great discussion with Matt. Some great insights. You know, ex-military, he's studied these kinds of things for some time, so I think his input here is valuable. So if you want to learn more, join us at redicemembers.com. It's only $10 a month. You can do a plus donation tier if you'd like to. You can also do a producer or executive producer tier for those of you guys who want to get some extra resources our way and get a shout-out at the end of the show. Keep in mind, we don't have any sponsors or ads on the websites or in the show. We don't have any angel investors or big venture capitalists moving in like left-wing media does. We're 100% dependent on you guys out there supporting us, not only for our continued survival, but actually being able to grow as well. So we appreciate all of your support. With that in mind, thank you so much to our executive producers today, T. Lothrop Stoddard, V. Miller, Resin Revolt, Good Luck Lap, Jake, Red Pill Rundown, Chalky Milk, French 47, Mark Smith, No One Jeeves, President Obunga, Mongoose, William Fox, Angry White Soccer Mom, The Second Wanderer, Operation Werewolf, The Ride Never Ends, Francis Parker Yockey, Dillbob. We also have Last Place Simp, Joseph Hart, Purple Haze, and JP. Thank you so much, guys. We appreciate all of you. Also, thanks to our producers, Mr. Walker 696, Johansson, Leroy Dumond, Snark Pup, Eyes Open, Mr. Lemry, Urinu, Obadiah Hakeswill, Single Action Army, and George Porsche. We do appreciate all of you. Thank you so much for your support. Please share our links to shows, clips, videos, things like that. Help get the word out, bypass the censors, and help spread to new audiences as well. We do appreciate all of you. Thank you so much, guys. We'll be back with hour two here with Matt Bracken. Check it out. Good stuff coming up. We'll see you after the break.